Shane Jones is with us for a kōrero, and we always look forward to that on a Tuesday morning. Thank you for your time, Shane. Tēnā koe.
Hi, morena, tēnā koe, Dale.
Kia ora. Firstly, and just out of respect, acknowledging Tā Tamati's passing, a very influential personality in Tau Māori for a long time, Shane. What sort of interactions did you have with that rangatira?
Yes, well, I went to school with a number of his tamariki at Tipene, and naturally I recall the time that he was the tumuaki of the Māori affairs back in the days of Korowetere. I remember fondly him bringing the various kaupapa, including an upgrading of the mana, maxis, and indeed the kohanga reo around the marae. He cut a fine figure, didn't he? He was a very fine looking man, and naturally excelled not only in our Māori academic pursuits, but he had been a distinguished sportsman and produced a large brood of tamariki. He re-established the Aparanangata series of lectures, and they followed in the footsteps of the Ngata tradition of investing in education, deep pride in their Ngāti Porou lineage. And, you know, you can't take it away from them. The Ngāti Porou leadership and the Ngāti Porou people, they ruled, in my view, for a long period of time here in Wellington. They understood how to exercise influence throughout the civil service. And I just think about my own time at St. Stephen's School. Most of the towering figures that we were taught about that had dominated the Māori world in the 30s, 40s, 50s, they were often figures from the coast. And Āwi Riddell was our Māori language teacher. He went on to distinguish himself. And now I think very fondly of Tamati and his wife, and naturally his nieces, Hekia Parata. I remember her coming back from the United States of America, and she went on to work for David Longhi, and in those days Tamati was the leader of the Māori affairs. I remember Longhi telling a hilarious story. It may have been in the time of the Māori loans affair, which was a fiasco, and Longhi summons in front of a bunch of ministers Tamati Reedy over to give an account what the hell had happened. And apparently Tamati said, "Well, Prime Minister, it all begins with the Lord's Prayer." And at that point, the entire room erupted in laughter. So there you go, bro.
Well, we'll have a kōrero one day about how that came to be, the very strong influence from the coast on New Zealand and Māori politics. There's a story to be told there, but we won't go into that just now. Shane, budget week, and, you know, hardly feeling as though there's going to be a lot of celebration from the Māori angles and perspectives. What do you anticipate? Is there going to be any Māori money? That's probably a pretty straightforward question. Are you aware of any money going to Māori kaupapa this time around?
Well, it's fair to say that we're running a tight budget fiscal policy. There's some very tight parameters because money is in short supply. However, I would say to the brethren within the Māori broadcasting community, hold your breath, and there's only Tuesday night sleep, Wednesday night sleep, and then listen into the budget on Thursday afternoon, and then Tama will make a few announcements which would be of interest to the brethren of the Māori broadcasting community.
The brethren of the Māori broadcasting community. Thank you for that, that description. You fine-looking Māori man. Now, was that for? And this is coming because you and Winston went into bat for us.
Well, just tie-ho, bro, tie-ho. But I think that Winston's already talked about the fact that although we may have pulled back on subsidizing the third year university students, a lot of that money will still be made available and dedicated to apprenticeships and our young people doing trade training. And we do have a lot of rangatahi moving in the direction of trade training and whatnot. So probably not to the expectation that a lot of our listeners would like. However, I want everyone to bear in mind Things are still very, very tight on the fiscal situation, but not all is lost.
Have you got any thoughts on where this document is? Seemingly some of the big emitters that were in line to be taken to court by Mike Smith, that there's a document that seemingly was shared around, perhaps trying to influence the government to change legislation to deny that vehicle for individuals to challenge emitters. Have you some thoughts on that one, Shane?
I want to
add that the headlines are reading that fast track project applicants have spent $1 million, most of that money, in fact, all of it going to National and New Zealand First.
Now, Dale, you're doing yourself and your listeners a disservice by you're doing yourself a disservice and your listeners by turning Radio New Zealand headlines into news. Well, of course there is truth to the statement that Fast Track is a totally successful initiative. And from time to time, people do donate to our party. And there may be a coincidence that they are applicants of the Fast Track. That's how democracy works. Now, in relation to my Ngāti Kahu whanaunga, Mike Smith wanting to sue all of the big companies over climate change, the courts are not in charge of climate change, e mara. Parliament and the government's in charge of climate change regulations, not the Supreme Court. And it's important that our people go and vote so they can influence the composition of Parliament, not the Supreme Court.
So these donations to political parties aren't trying to court favour?
Well, I don't think they are. However, I accept that for a host of my critics, they reach for the most extreme interpretation that just because you donate to a political party, they sadly interpret that as somehow being an improper level of influence. But that is why you have a declaration, and a number of these projects that are being approved, they're leading to employment, they're leading to investment, they're leading to opportunities for firms to build things, grow things. Boy, that's what our country needs. We need to be on a growth curve. We shouldn't be down there in Struggler's Gully bitching and moaning all the time.
Well, I agree with that. I was really intrigued by the idea of a special economic zone. Now, it's framed as being up around Marsden Point, underutilised facility, deep water berth, etc. But I haven't heard of this model. And maybe could you give it to us in layman's terms? What's planned there?
Well, look, this is an idea that was actually used way back in Thatcher's time. Margaret Thatcher, when she sought to rescue parts of England, dedicated small parts of northern England as economic development zones, and they changed taxation law and they changed planning law so they could accelerate development and attract people of talent, investment to regrow places that had become depressed. They've done it in Singapore, they've done it in parts of Southeast Asia. And it's a way of rapidly redeveloping areas that have natural advantages but are unlikely to attract accelerated development because they're slightly out of the way. Now, where you draw the final boundaries will depend, no doubt, on some negotiations with the local council and other stakeholders. I mean, there's a debate that Marsden Point might be a bit too narrow. Like we have the Portland Cement Works, maybe it could extend around the harbour. No doubt other parts in New Zealand would like to be defined also as a special economic zone, but we have to start somewhere. We felt that because energy is such a strategic opportunity for New Zealand, and Marsden Point has a brilliant location in relation to a naturally deep harbour entrance. There's interest from overseas to create bunkering facilities at Marsden Point, and that's where we want to start.
Yeah. We'll see what sort of traction the idea gets, but it was slightly out of left field. Would it be a tax haven?
Well, in other parts around the world, taxation is often used as an attractive feature to encourage people, and the tax advantages don't last forever. They fade over time once the businesses are up and running. Other jurisdictions do attract, for example, like Ireland. They have had tax as an advantage to encourage large countries to companies to relocate there. And this is how innovative New Zealand First is prepared to be to rejuvenate the economy, whether it's splitting in half these villainous gentailers, creating competition in the supermarkets, taking the talkie to the calcified profiteering of the banking sector, and a variety of other examples of the big end of town making life misery for our garden variety Kiwis. We are a disruptive influence, and we want to ensure that the vested interests that dominate our economy know that change is on the way.
Tēnā koe. Thank you. Because of your long-standing interest in and involvement with, might you touch on the Commercial Fisheries AGM coming up in Wellington, and how iwi are affected here, or a bit of an update from your understanding, please, Shane?
Yeah, well, it's a busy week in Wellington. Today is Tuesday, and the commercial seafood industry are holding the first day of a host of conferences, and I'm trotting off to talk to them. I mean, New Zealand First has a long period of connection with the seafood industry. I used to chair Sea Lords and the Te Ohu Kai Moa during the day. We will never, ever back down in the face of green climate change hysteria. We will never back down to the recreational fishing industry wanting to terminate commercial fishing, destroy the fisheries settlement of 1992 so a bunch of people can bob around on recreational boats in the Hauraki Gulf and drive the commercial sector into penury. That will just never happen for as long as NZ First forms a part of any government. And I'm going to give that message. Sustainability is important, but employment, export is important, and we need to keep the settlement intact, whilst at the same time ensuring that people operate within guardrails. I think it's essential that the rangatahi, the young people, see an idea that they can create a future for themselves, and we respect the men and women who go out every day, every week, against the elements and bring home the bounty, because the majority of us, to the extent we still eat fish, we buy fish from the supermarket. We don't go out on the gin palaces and pretend that we're feeding ourselves, when in actual fact it's just a lifestyle choice.
Interesting. We've got 1 minute before the news comes in. The decision by Aparama Edwards to throw his hat in the ring politically, do you have regard for his abilities, and what would you say of his decision?
Oh, I note that the veteran of Taitokedo, iwi politics, well, not even iwi politics, protest politics, Hone Haruroma Whanaunga from Te Aupouri, has stepped back, and him and I went to Tipene, we're from the same iwi. He's got the bragging rights to have come back into Parliament, but I can understand his decision. My message to young Aperahama is get match fit. Do not come to Parliament believing, like young Doc from the South Island or Waititi, that because you make a loud noise on the marae and you can bang a calabash, that you're going to change the culture, you're going to change the system, or you're going to change the tikanga of Parliament. This place has its own culture, it has its own sovereignty, and any young Māori coming here needs to respect that. And don't come wearing strange peacock feathers or with a level of arrogance, which is what has destroyed the Māori Party, so that they are a mere shadow of what they formerly were in the days of Dr. Sharples and Tariadan. If he comes with suitable modesty, he may do well. If he brings braggadocio and a level of whakamanamana, he will go the way of those that are on their way out.
Thank you for your thoughts, and look forward to a review of the budget as well when time allows. Mauri ora kia koe, Shane. Thank you.
Hei kona.
Tēnā koe. Shane Jones with us on Tuesday mornings. Always interesting.